Hello and welcome to Really Cool People, a podcast produced by Schweitzer Church. I'm your host, Jason Leininger. This is a place where we get to hear stories of really cool people. Some of them I've met, some of them I'll meet for the first time, but people whose stories are indeed fascinating. The hope is that while we hear a person's story, we will be inspired, encouraged, and challenged through moments of serendipity. In a sermon entitled The Weight of Glory, C.S. Lewis said, "There are no ordinary people. You and I have never talked to a mere mortal." And so it's my joy over the next few moments to introduce you to somebody who is not a mere mortal, but is a really cool person. Today, we're going to meet LaDonna Griner. I met LaDonna soon after coming to Springfield about 11 years ago. LaDonna is an active person, and she shares with us about how she started life in Southwest Missouri in a one-room schoolhouse, and how it's taken her all around the world, and how it's giving her projects right now that she's curious about. So let's lean in and listen to LaDonna Griner. Well, today we're excited to welcome LaDonna Griner. So LaDonna, let's start with your story.
Well, I grew up in Southwest Missouri and spent the first part of my life in that area. Born in Neosho, Missouri. People may know where that is. And I have five younger sisters. When I was 5 years old, my parents moved to a farm between Sarcoxy and Diamond. Before that, I went to a one-room schoolhouse. Started school at five and went to a one-room schoolhouse in Atlas, Missouri. But I finished up the first grade in Sarcoxy and graduated from there and went to a computer school, became a computer programmer, but I was only 17, so no one wants to hire a 17-year-old to program computers. So I ended up bouncing around from a bunch of different jobs and finally landed at Drury to get my 2-year degree in computer programming and my 4-year degree in, which took me 8 years to get, but I got it in business administration. But finally landed in a career, you might say, as a fundraiser for nonprofits, international nonprofits, for about 25 years, and had the privilege of traveling all over the world, taking donors to visit projects that they either wanted to support or were supporting. It was a chance of a lifetime because when I graduated high school, I really wanted to be a flight attendant so I could travel. And I didn't qualify at that point. They had very strict requirements. And so I finally got to do what I wanted to do some 20 years later or so. Probably not that long. Anyway, got to travel all over the world, seeing places that normally you don't see. I got to see how the real people live, which is what I always enjoy doing when I travel just on my own. But sat in many mud huts with dirt floors, eating meals with people with my hands and out of metal pie plates. And some of my most memorable times were I met a woman named Helen Good in Tanzania. And she was a very strong entrepreneurial woman and part of the programs. I worked for World Vision at the time, and they had programs that helped them not just with health and clean water and education, but also starting businesses. And she had been given a goat. And the deal was when you were given a goat, when that goat has babies, you give one away, and then you just keep producing the goats. And she had, and she'd been able to build a new house, but she wasn't living in the house. And I asked her, "Why aren't you living in this nice brick house here?" So she opens the door, and she had cotton piled from the back corner of the room all the way to the doorway. And I said, "What are you doing with this cotton?" She says, "I'm waiting for the price to go up." And then she had done that all with starting with one goat. And she had was now housing her family, her children, and her grandchildren in this little estate area for her because they moved into her old house. She was going to move into that one as soon as she sold her cotton. Just remarkable people and the happiest children you'll ever see, and just some really rewarding experiences. Got to go to Republic of Georgia and meet people there, and Romania, and South American countries, and just all over the world. A lot of African countries, obviously, and just really had the privilege of meeting some of the most amazing people you could imagine. And then after many years of that, I came back to Springfield. During that time, I lived in Georgia and Florida, but I came back to Springfield because that's where my grandchildren were and most of my children. And we've been here for about 10 years now. And I really enjoy it. I've started my own business. The fundraising ended at about 62, and I decided it was time to do what I wanted to do, what I really enjoyed. I enjoyed that, but there's a lot of stress and that goes with seeing the poverty that I saw and seeing the people in such great need and only being able to do a limited amount to help them. So I needed a break. I needed a sabbatical. And so I took an extended sabbatical and I started writing and wrote 3 books on gratitude, designed some note cards, featuring photos of the Ozarks, got into photography, and now I do photographs on metal, and I've started doing some acrylic painting, and so I sell all of these things at festivals and art shows and farmers markets and various things like that, and online. But I'm just really enjoying myself now, so I call myself semi-retired.
That's funny that you would call yourself semi-retired. Uh-huh. I've had the joy of seeing you in action, and I don't know that I'd ever call you semi-retired. You're a full-on person at work with a lot of drive and a lot of vision and a lot of irons and a lot of fire. So
that's true, but I get to do what I have more flexibility now. I make my own schedule, and I get to do the things that God puts in my path without hesitation.
Yeah. Well, that's a fun place to be.
It is. It's a very fun place to be. I think I'm in the best place I've ever been, honestly.
Uh-huh. Well, you covered a lot of ground pretty fast, uh-huh. and you've highlighted a couple big times and places. I wonder if we could go back and talk about some different places in your life.
Sure.
Like your childhood. You said you're the oldest of
five girls, no
five
boys.
Siblings.
Yeah. No, I have 4 siblings.
There's 4 siblings. Okay.
Yeah, there's 5 of us now.
So what's it like to be the oldest of that many siblings?
I didn't realize it, but it's a lot of responsibility. As you know, I took it upon myself, I guess. That's part of why I'm a type A personality. I think I would have been anyway. But, you know, I'm pretty good at organizing things. As you well know, we've worked on some things together. Mm-hmm. And pretty good at bossing people around. I think I got that experience early on with 4 younger sisters, and I know they would agree.
Yeah. So for those of you listening, there's a little nickname that I came up with for LaDonna a while back, and I had the audacity to tell her that, and I've been known to call her Mother Superior because she can put things in order and line everything up. And so now this the number of your siblings is making all of that
makes
seem
sense.
Right. Yeah,
yes.
It makes sense. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you did all that. What was that life like when you were being responsible as a young kid, as a teenager?
We lived out in the country, as I said, but we were like 7 miles from the nearest town, dirt road, rough dirt road. So my friends didn't really want to come out and see me with their nice cars on the roads. And so we were pretty much our own playmates.
Mm-hmm.
And we would make up a lot of games to play, and we would we just did a lot of makeup things, you know, just to have fun. And we would go down in the field, and there was a creek down there, and we would, when it wasn't dry, we'd go down, and I can remember pretend fishing with a safety pin, and I actually caught a fish. I put in a little puddle to him. One of my dad was home for lunch that day, and so I thought it'd stay in there. I took him down to see it. It had gone. It had jumped out, but I was so disappointed. But I actually caught a fish with a safety pin.
Oh, my goodness.
So we just did fun, crazy things like that.
Wow. Then you graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Were you 17 when you graduated high school?
I was 17. I started school when I was 5 because my birthday's in October, and yeah. Back then you could start when you're 5. They didn't have kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
And so I started and went to a one-room schoolhouse in Atlas, Missouri, because my dad worked at the chemical. There was an Atlas chemical plant at the time down near Joplin.
Okay.
And so that's where he worked, and we lived right down the road from that, and the school was across the road from the chemical plant where he worked.
How did you get interested in computers, programming for computers?
Well, I just had a knack for it. There was a guy that came to the house, and he was selling the training program, and I took the test, and supposedly I answered a question on it that most people couldn't answer. And, you know, I'm not sure if it was just a sales gimmick, but anyway, my parents were very, very strict. I couldn't dance. This is the 70s. I couldn't dance. I had to wear skirts to my knees. I couldn't wear pants. I couldn't play cards. I couldn't go to movies. The list goes on and on. So I was looking for a way out, to be honest. And since I was only 17, I knew they weren't going to let me leave until I was 18 unless I had a way out, you know, something like this. So when that opportunity came up, I latched on to it quickly and went to Kansas City for the summer for the training. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was able to get out on my own and begin learning a little bit more about life than I had been allowed to learn under the sheltered Fundamental Baptist home that I grew up in.
Wow. Talk about that faith journey for just a moment, since you've brought it up.
Yeah. Well, my mom started going to church when we moved out to the country, and my dad was definitely not a Christian. One of his friends told me just a few years ago that he knew more foul language than anybody he'd ever known. He was a hellraiser, I guess you'd call it, and then some. But God got a hold of him, and he became a preacher after I had left home. But he was, you know, 18 years later, he became a preacher.
Wow.
So, but during that time, we went to a Bible Baptist church in Sarcoxie, and it was a Fundamental Baptist church, and my parents were often more strict than the pastor's kids. You know, we were more restricted than the pastor's kids were because my parents were very restrictive. They both were. And so there's no balance there. And so it's kind of hard. I mean, we learned how to work. We all know how to work really hard. And we learned how to play with each other. And my mother would say we'll be in church every time the church doors are open. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have the relationship with Christ that I missed, felt. I really felt like the church and the religion was joy stealers. They stole my joy. Mm-hmm. It was all about guilt and fear. And, you know, if you had a flat, it was because you didn't go to church that day or something like that. I mean, that's kind of the philosophy. It was very almost cultish, almost cultish. So it was hard to align it was like, think for yourself and be a self-thinker. Don't let people talk, but as long as you think like we think. You know, that sort of thing. So it was mixed signals there all through my life. So it was very hard. And I still struggle with it sometimes. Some of those mantras that I was taught, you know, like something bad happens to you, it's because you didn't, you know, say your prayers that day or you didn't do, you know, something. And I still struggle with that sometimes. But yeah, it wasn't a joy-based or there was no grace. And my mom even admitted that later in life, close to her deathbed. She said, you know, I realize that we never really showed you girls a lot of grace. And they didn't. So it was hard. But the best thing about being raised in the church like that was the music. I mean, I love the hymns and I remember a lot of them. And that's something I'm most grateful for, really. I do resent and did for a long time, was bitter about how we were taught to worship the Lord. But the music, I love the music, and it still comes back to me.
Do you have any favorite hymns?
Oh, I like Count Your Blessings, of course. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Amazing Grace. And then How Great Thou Art. I can't hardly sing it without crying, or I can't hear it sung without crying. It just moves me. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you said your parents didn't let you listen to music or go to movies. Or did you ever go back and when you were older and like pick up tunes or watch movies? Or, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love the Beatles. I love the Eagles. I love the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. Yeah, I made up for lost time when I got away from home. I kind of packed, you know, my teenage years into 2 or 3 years.
And, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I was a bit of a hellraiser myself at that point in life. I was just experiencing all the things that I wanted to experience and hadn't been allowed to. And I found my way, you know. I didn't get in too much trouble. but I definitely wasn't going to church and wasn't... I wouldn't say I wasn't close to the Lord, but I wasn't in the way my parents thought. I mean, there was actually a time when they... disowned me, basically, because I was doing things they didn't agree with. So they didn't speak to me for months. So that was hard.
I bet that was hard.
Yeah.
So when you look back on that, I mean, that was, on the one hand, that was quite a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Do you see some things that you appreciate? Do you have 2 or 3 things that you're like...
Yeah, my mom was a lover of nature. She always was teaching us about nature, and she loved nature. And then she loved to back road. And oftentimes we would go to a country church, be going to a country church, and we'd be on the way home. And my dad worked shift work, so sometimes it was just us girls and her. And she'd say, I wonder where this road goes. And we'd take off down that road and find out where it went. So I loved that part. You know, she had a sense of adventure in that regard. Yeah. She liked to be outside. She liked to garden, and I liked to garden. And so, yeah, those things were really the things that I loved about my mom and my life growing up.
Yeah. Then how'd you find your way? So if on the one hand, your folks thought you were certainly distant from the Lord, but how'd you find your way back into a place where you would eventually work for a nonprofit that was doing gospel-centered work around the world?
Yeah. Well, I didn't go to church for a long time. I didn't have... It was very hypocritical in my view. Richard and I got married. We got married in our house. But we didn't go to church for a long time. But then we had our daughter. And I was about 30 then. And she, my mom planted seeds in her that, you know, you need to be going to church. Your parents need to take you to church. And we would let her stay with my mom sometimes, you know, just as a grant, because she was their grandparent. And so Krista started bugging us to go to church. And we were living in Florida at the time. And that's really how we got started back to church.
Wow. Mm-hmm. How old was she?
4. No, she would have been, she's 4, about 5.
Okay.
5 or 6, yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And then how'd you encounter grace? Like,
I read a lot of books. I love Philip Yancey, Chuck Swindoll. I read a lot of books, had some good ministers and Sunday school teachers, really more good Sunday school teachers than anything. and just read my Bible, read the books, and began to, you know, well, I think I showed more grace than my parents did, because I knew what it felt like not to, not to have that part of your life missing. But I think I understood it a lot more by the books I read and things.
You just introduced us to Richard and your daughter, Krista. Talk a little bit about, I mean, that's an interesting story all in itself, the fact that you were married in your house.
Yeah.
So where'd you guys meet? And
we met at work. We both worked here in Springfield at Herman Lumber, and we met there, and then we worked together for quite a while before we started dating, and his brother was a minister. So when we decided to get married, we were didn't have a church home, didn't really feel, I'd been married before, so I'd been married in a church, and then didn't really have a church home. And so we just decided he had three children by a previous marriage. They were all part of the little ceremony that we had there. It was very small. My sister and her husband were our witnesses, and his brother married us, and we went to Eureka Springs for a honeymoon, and the rest is history. That was almost 43 years ago.
That's a it's pretty good place to get married, actually. Yeah. My grandparents, or at least, actually both my grandparents got married in a home. It wasn't their home, but it was in a minister's home, and that's they both had long marriages. And
yeah,
that's a fascinating place to get married. What are some of the things you and Richard love to do together?
Oh, we love to travel. We love to go do things outdoors. We love to camp. We have a camper that we try and take out every month and go somewhere to camp, somewhere around the Ozarks or, you know, northern Missouri. We usually don't venture further out than the Ozarks, because there's a lot of opportunities to camp at places in the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. We camp at Corps campgrounds, Corps engineers, and state parks, and we really enjoy that. In fact, I just started planning and making reservations for our 2024 trips. So we do a lot of work together. We work on our house. He's taught me how to do carpentry work. He's a very good carpenter, and very handy. And so he's taught me a lot of that. And we used to garden. We don't have a good place to garden right now, but we used to garden a lot. So those are a lot of outdoor activities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe in a little bit you can talk about, why don't you talk about it right now? One of the activities and books that you wrote recently.
Hiking.
Yeah,
yes.
Hiking, yes.
Well, and Richard's a little bit older than I am, and so his health isn't as good. Although now it's much better, because he got a pacemaker, and that has made 200. He says he's 200% better, and he is.
Okay.
So he can keep up with me hiking now. But in the past, he really couldn't. So one of our adventures was hiking in January, and wanted to go hike to a waterfall that was going to be running. Then it doesn't run in the summertime. It's the top of Tomsock Mountain. And since I'm a professional photographer, I wanted to get a picture of that. And I had never been there either. And so we were going to hike down to the waterfall. I was going to get a picture, and we were going to go back. And it was about 2:00 in the afternoon when we got there. It was January. It gets dark about 4:30. So we were rushing to get on the trail so that we could get back before dark. And I intentionally left my phone in the car, because I wasn't getting reception, and it was only had like 50% or less power left. So I thought, if I take it, I'll just break it, drop it, lose it. So what's the point? I'll just leave it here. And I ran off and forgot my fanny pack that has all my first aid and, you know, emergency snacks, stuff like that in it. So I had my jacket on, and we headed out, and we got about halfway there, and he said, I this is as far as I'm going to go. And so we have an agreement that he, you know, he'll go as far as he can, and then I'll continue, and then we'll meet up later on at the end of the hike. And so that's what we did. However, I got down there. I got the picture. I achieved that goal. My next goal, to get back to the parking lot, did not happen. I was in a, you know, I was hurrying back to get back before dark so he wouldn't be worried about me. And the trails aren't marked that well there because there's a lot of flat rock, igneous rock that's just flat. They don't spray paint trails on the rocks like they do some places. And I took what I thought was a trail, turned out to be a deer trail. And I got lost. And I got really lost. I had been lost before, but not like this. And I ended up spending the night in on top of a mountain. Not, it wasn't, it was Wildcat Mountain. It wasn't even Tomsock Mountain. That's how lost I got. And I spent the night there, and about 2:30 in the morning, they had to call off the search that Richard had initiated when the guy came up to lock up the park because they were going to hunt hogs the next day from helicopters. And it was very foggy. And so they had started a search and rescue teams out. But 2:30, they had to call them in because it started lightning, thundering, raining. I mean, the fog had been really heavy. It was so heavy you could hear it hitting the leaves. But it hadn't started lightning until then. Mm-hmm. And so they called him off, and I was out there in the woods leaning up against a tree, me and my tree, for the whole night. And it didn't stop raining or lightning until daybreak.
You've put that story down in a book.
I have.
Yeah. And what's the name of your book?
I'm Here for a Purpose.
Yeah. It's a really fantastic story. And
well, thank you.
The story goes on even beyond that.
It does.
To include more, more interesting tales.
Yes. Yes. You sometimes wonder why God puts you in certain positions. But having been in, charged with a felony, for example, and yeah.
That's and, in the, that yes. goes past after she gets, after you get lost and you get
found. Yes.
And then it, there's a.
Has nothing to do with the hike.
No.
But it does have to do with that trip. But, you know, it, I know how people feel, you know, while I was out in the woods freezing and wondering how I was going to get out of there and praying and all this, I thought about the homeless people, how every night mm-hmm. they're out there in weather like this. How do they survive? When I was charged with a felony, I was in court and I just felt so marginalized, so just... like I was nobody and nothing and you can't say anything. And it was just a really rude awakening for me that I could be treated that way mm-hmm. because I am a nice person. I'm an upstanding citizen. Why are you treating me like I'm some criminal and have no say in the matter when I wasn't even the one? Well, I won't tell the story. You'll have to read the book, but I never should have been charged to begin with.
Yeah. That's the truth.
And so to be, so I know how people feel now who are in front of a justice system unfairly and they have no voice whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You cannot say anything. And the judge actually told me that. He says, if you say anything, it can be held against you. And so then you have the fear of God in you and you're like, oh, I don't want to say anything because he's going to throw me in jail today. I don't know. It's my first experience in anything like that. And I, it really gave me empathy for those who are in that situation. And mine had a good ending 6-7 months later, but not everyone's does. You know, mm-hmm. people are wrongly accused and put in jail all the time for things they didn't commit. I did hire a lawyer and things, you know, it drug on and on. So I, at one point I thought I was going to be in jail because it just, you know, it was so wrong, but it, the court system couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. And that was just unbelievable to me. So, and as you know, I can stand up for myself pretty well.
Yes, you can.
But in this circumstance, I had no voice.
Hmm. Well, if you want to know more about that story, get LaDonna's book, I'm Here for a Purpose. And I shared that story with a few other people in the office when it wasn't yet in book form, but it was just a PDF. And they were amazed they couldn't put that story down. It just, it kept going and going. And we're glad that you never went to jail.
Me too.
And we're You are certainly here for a purpose.
Yes.
I've got a bunch of questions for you. So let's go back to you and Richard got married. Mm-hmm. You were in Florida. You came back. You had a sense of coming back to faith or reencountering mm-hmm. the church. And then you went to work for a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What inspired you? What drew you into that work and that world?
That's an interesting story, too. We were in Florida, and my stepchildren had always been involved in Boys and Girls Clubs here in Springfield. They played ball at the clubs and things like that. And the founder of Boys and Girls Club from Greenwich, Connecticut, was living across the intercoastal from us in Florida, and he and some other people there wanted to start a Boys and Girls Club there in the county that we lived in, and people had never heard of Boys and Girls Clubs. And I found that strange because I thought they were everywhere. But so I got involved. I had my own business at the time, and I got involved in helping get that club started. I was one of the co-founders, and that led to a lot of fundraising. And so I didn't even realize that's what I was doing. I just did it because it needed to be done. We needed the money. Ask people for money. It's a good cause, you know. And so I found that I had a knack for that, and that it was, if I believed in the cause, it was easy to do for me. And that's how I got into it. My husband, Richard, lost his job, and I had to go to work with benefits. My business didn't pay benefits, of course. And so I had to find a job, and I went into nonprofits. I worked for a hospice. The first job I had was for a hospice. And that was in community relations, convincing people that hospice is a good thing. I never picked the easy jobs, you know?
Well, I can see how that job would fit you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've been doing that. I think that's probably how we met, out in the community.
Yes.
And then you realize that you attend Schweitzer, but you're always doing community relations kinds of work.
I enjoy it. Yeah, I enjoy connecting people. Mm-hmm. I enjoy bringing people together for a good cause or because they can help each other. Or, you know, it's just, I just get a lot of satisfaction out of bringing people together.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned about that at one point, you really started to feel the stress and the strain of mm-hmm. seeing the weight and the burdens that people carry in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how'd you carry on for so long? And then when did you know it was time to lay that burden down?
I didn't. I think God did. Oh. I would have kept on doing it. But as it turned out, at the time I was working for an organization that helped, it was called Holt International, and they helped children, help with adoptions for children from Korea, China, Ethiopia, various foreign countries, international adoptions. They helped with those. And so I was, and they also built a hospital in Ethiopia and had orphanages in Korea, South Korea, and things like that. So I was working for them, but I was the first person they'd ever hired that was out in the field, not at the home office. They really didn't know what to do with me. They didn't know. They didn't know how to channel work for me to raise funds for. So I wasn't getting all the really meaty projects were going to the people who were there in the office, and I would get the crumbs. And it's hard to raise, you know, $10,000 for something that's not even costing $10,000, a program that didn't even cost $10,000. So I did a good job with what I had, and I told them for several years, after about 3 years, I started saying, you know, I really need better resources. And they just didn't know how to do it. And the people that were there in the office had been there for years and years. So they weren't, the other fundraisers weren't willing to turn loose of anything. And so 5 years in, I just decided, you know, I've got to make a decision here. I'm not moving forward in my career. I'm moving backwards. And so that's what I told the CEO. The CEO would call me every year and we'd have this conversation. And I said, you know, Bill, I need to make some decisions here. I need to know if you can support this position, because if not, I need to make a decision. I said, because I'm not, as I said, not moving forward. I'm actually moving backwards. And he was really caught by surprise because basically I was kind of giving my notice in a way. Mm-hmm. But I actually orchestrated my departure in that way because, you know, if you're not getting what you need from a position and they can't give it to you, then you do need to move on. Well, I was looking for a job, but hadn't found one here in Springfield yet. And my boss and the HR person were going to pay me a visit. At the time, I didn't know the HR person was coming. My boss was coming out to visit me, and just he'd never done this. So I did think that was kind of strange. And as it turned out, my daughter was coming in from Korea on the same. Her flight had gotten delayed, so they ended up being on the same flight from Denver to Springfield. So I was at the airport when my boss showed up, and there was the HR person with him. So I knew what was going on. He wasn't coming to visit me. He was coming to visit me and give me my pink slip. Mm-hmm. So God blessed me in that way because he gave me about an hour to prepare mentally for that meeting. And so then I met with them and I knew what was going on, and I gave them all the papers I had come to discuss. And, you know, they were shocked that I took it so well. But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, you know what's happening. I pretty well orchestrated it. Mm-hmm. And the answer was, no, we don't really know how to support someone out here and give them the things they need. And so they didn't say that, but that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And so I got severance pay a little bit, and I got got unemployment, and I even got some money for insurance because they were shocked at how well I took it. So I spent that time. I did look for a job, couldn't find one here because I was making a very decent wage, you know, working for international organizations, and couldn't touch that here. Mm-hmm. And again, I wasn't willing to move back in my career. It's hard enough for a woman to make a decent salary as it is, but much less to take, you know, $20,000 cut in pay or more. That would have been the minimum. I just wasn't willing to do that. And I was offered a job doing bringing businesses to the organization to train and teach and to help. And I thought, why would I do this for someone else? And, you know, that was a condition of the job, was I'd have to bring the business in for them to pay me. And I thought, why don't I just do that for myself? So that's what I decided to do. So I started down that path, and then led to the writing the gratitude. I was going to 1 Million Cups at the Cups at the time, and got the idea to come up with a gratitude kit so that everybody would have, you'd have everything in one place at one time to write a note of encouragement or thanks. So I have this gratitude kit that contains a book that gives you ideas on what to write and how to say it and what to say and the benefits of gratitude. And there's, you know, a couple of them now. 21 Reasons to Say Thank You with a Grateful Heart, which Bob had me as a speaker 1 week and quite a while ago. Several people bought that book, and I've taught the class here at the church. And then 21 Reasons to Say Thank You to Your Coworkers. And so I like it because I'm helping the world to be a kinder, more grateful place. And the great thing about gratitude is it doesn't just help you, it helps other people too. And that's why I went with writing a note instead of just a gratitude list. When you write a note to somebody, they most of the time will save that handwritten note because you don't get that many. Mm-hmm. And it's very meaningful. And plus you get a good feeling, and you get benefits from that, writing that note also. So it's a two-way, you know, street there. And I like that. And I like the fact that I can promote our local beauty here in the Ozarks through the cards, the photos on the cards. And so that's what I did. And that's how it started. And then I took so many pictures for the cards that I thought, I got to do something. I can't have 100 cards out here. So I started putting them on metal. And I love the way photographs look on metal because they just come alive. It's like they're, it's like you could walk into the picture. It's just almost three-dimensional. It's like looking out a window at the scene. And I love that. So I do primarily metal. photographs on metal.
What's one of your favorite pictures that you have of photograph on metal?
I have one. Well, I have one that I took of a lake, and it's like the sky is blue, and it's this real, almost surreal blue. But then the sun is this beautiful golden yellow, and it's at the end of the day, and it's are sitting at a campsite, and it just that's my current favorite. I also have one that it's called Mystic Morning. And it's of the woods on a foggy day. And it's just very peaceful. Mm-hmm. And then I love the waterfalls. Waterfalls and sunsets are my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my first introductions to Missouri some time ago was the mill that's down by Eminence, Missouri. And
you've Alley, got a, yeah.
What's the name of it?
Alley Spring.
It's a beautiful
picture. I've got a great photo of that mill. Yes, it's one of my, in fact, last summer I went around photographing mills all over. And so I've got about 12 different mills that are rather picturesque and got to see wild horses on the way to one of them. And so got some photos of the wild horses in Shannon County and just, you know, you just never know what you're going to discover when you're out there on the trail.
So that's kind of like we've taken an overview of your life. Who are three people that have really spoken into your life or are like they've had a significant contribution? I mean, and you may have never met them, but they're just like some folks that have really been impactful for you.
I had those written down on my notes and I had to think about that for a minute. One of them was the former president of Evangel, Carol Taylor, I think is her last name. And I heard her speak one time years ago, and she said, say yes. When things come up and opportunities come your way, just say yes and see where it takes you. And I thought, that's really pretty profound. And so I try and say yes whenever I can. Sometimes I say yes too often. And I've had to back away from that a little bit. But I think that's a good motto of life is to say yes. And then to live your life with no regrets. I like that. And I've seen that in many people's lives. Sunday school teachers that I've had, close friends who I have an accountability group that I've had for over 20 years now, been a part of, started when we lived in Georgia and we're going to church there. One of the pastor's wives started a accountability group. And I think ours is probably the only one still going, but I still keep in touch with those girls. And they are all people I admire, people I look up to, people I seek out for advice and prayer and different things. Many of them are just people who've walked through my life at different points and just spoken to my heart, spoken to the place I was. Don't necessarily remember their names, but I do, you know, I think I learn pretty much from everybody I meet. Mm-hmm. I think everyone has something unique to offer, something that you can learn from, that you can use to grow to either in your thought pattern or physically, mentally, you know, spiritually. Mm-hmm. Everyone has has a story, but they have a lot of wisdom and a lot to offer. So I like to, that's why I enjoy meeting people and connecting people because I can learn from them, you know?
We learn from other people. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if there comes a time to everyone or, but I think you probably do. I think you probably have some things that you're trying to pass along to some other folks. What are some of those things that you're trying to pass along?
Yes. Well, you know, you asked me earlier about my mom and my family, what I learned. My mom was a teacher at heart. She never got to be a teacher in school because my dad wouldn't let her go to college. But she was a teacher. She was a Sunday school teacher, and she was a teacher. She loved to teach us. And I think I picked that up along the way. And so many of my sisters did too. But I like helping other people learn things, like with the gratitude. Mm-hmm. I've taught several workshops and different things just on things that I think people want to know, or they express an interest in it, and I have enough knowledge and experience in that area, I'll have a workshop. I'm going to do a workshop on how to publish a book here in January, because a lot of people want to self-publish, and I've done that a few times. So I just enjoy helping people learn and grow. Yeah.
And so you are, as I mentioned earlier, you're always somebody who's active. You've always got some projects on the table.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about some of your projects that you're working on right now?
Oh, I started doing acrylic pours and art, which I just did a couple this morning. And I've never really been, I never thought of myself as an artist, but I've always been creative. But I'm actually taking an art class next month. That's one of my Christmas presents that I asked for from my husband. So I'm going to be taking an art class next month. Well, actually in January. And I'm going to learn the basics of art so that I can kind of know what I'm doing. But I just love acrylic pours because it gives you such freedom and such creativity, and you just never know what it's going to look like. And so things like that, you know, I am a very creative person, and I enjoy, you know, taking things that people normally throw away, and I've turned it into some art, wood pieces and things like that. And I've actually sold them. People like them, which amazes me, but I like repurposing things because I'm big on composting and the environment, protecting the environment. It comes from my Indian background, I think. And I just, you know, like the Indian chief said, the saying goes, we're just holding this earth for our children. You know, it doesn't belong to us. Mm-hmm. They said it better than that, but that's the gist of it. So I think we need to take care of it to pass it on. And I think that's what God wants us to do too, is to take care of the things he's given us.
Yeah. I'm always impressed when I've been around you, and that started at 1 million cups and has continued, has involved Schweitzer and lots of other things. I think one of the things that I've come to, in my own mind, think and wish for a lot of people, is that they would be curious. And you are a curious person.
I definitely am.
Yeah. You go out for the big hunt.
I never thought of it that way, but I guess so, yeah.
And you mentioned earlier how your mom used to head down that back road.
Uh-huh.
And what's your photography?
Barns, back roads, and byways photography. Yes.
So that sense of being curious has taken you down a lot of roads.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My granddaughter and my daughter-in-law and some of my kids think I'm crazy because I'll pull into a house and they'll have a cool barn out there, and I'll pull into the house and my granddaughter's been with me, and she crunches down in the seat, pulls her sweatshirt over her head and says, "I'm not here, Mimi." But I'll go up and ask them if I can take a picture of their barn and ask what the story on their barn is, you know, how long it's been there, things like that. So you meet some really cool people.
Yes, you do.
When you do that. And it's a lot of fun, too. And a few times I've been told no, and that's okay. I respect that. But majority, I think only twice. And I have a lot of pictures of barns.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time and for sharing this picture into your own life and slice of your life. Really appreciate that. There's a question I've asked people every time we've had this conversation. And so I want to close with this. What's a final word of advice you'd like to leave with us?
Oh, there's so many I could leave. But let's say, live your life with no regrets. And one way to do that is to be open to the opportunities that God puts in front of you, and be aware of those miracles that he puts in your path, and step into that. You know, even if it feels a little intrepid or a little scary, step out there, and God opened that door for you for a reason. So explore it. You know, never lose your sense of curiosity. Never lose your sense of that miracles are happening all the time, because that's part of life, and that's part of life that we overlook too often. And we really need to embrace that and celebrate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, LaDonna. You are a really cool person.
Well, thank you, Jason. Yeah. I think you're pretty cool yourself.
Well, a big thank you to LaDonna for sharing her story. In listening to LaDonna, I hope that you were encouraged, inspired, and challenged, and that you will begin to behold the people around you as the really cool people that they are. This Really Cool People podcast is produced by Switzer Church, Springfield, Missouri. Taylor Likes is the executive producer and editor, and I'm your host, Jason Leininger. You can help us out by liking, reviewing, and sharing this podcast. And if you'd like to send us listener feedback, you can do so by going to switzer.church, clicking on our pictures, and sending us an email. We'd love to hear from you. We're really glad that you've tuned in to Really Cool People. We cannot wait to hear your story. Until next time.